starting a new series this Sunday called Faith Building. It's Abraham's story, and I wanted to start right away by telling you that over and over and over again, instead of saying Abram, I'm going to say, can you guess? Abraham. So you're going to see it says Abram in our text, but I'm going to say Abraham. What I mean to say is Abram, because that's what's written there, and that means I'm going to get ahead of myself with this name, but I have not been able to avoid it all week while I'm reading, writing, and praying. So I already know that's going to happen. My hope is that some of us kind of identify ourselves in the story. Of course, the Bible's not about us, but it's for us. And we're going to get a chance to take a look at Abraham's life and see how God was at work, not just building our the future rescue plan, but also building Abraham's faith to accomplish things in him and through him. And so that's my prayer, is that we find ourselves in the story and that ultimately we see and respond to God and perhaps face the way that our lives have emerged. In some cases, our lives have emerged feeling so bland, our lives at times feeling overly basic, and for some of you probably recognize just so busy, feeling hyperactive and distracted, and it might be the fast pace of your modern life or entertainment or social media that's making it so hard to see and really to focus on what truly matters. And what happens? At some point or other in that process, we end up with quite a bit of apathy, apathetic faith. Some boredom where we start to think and feel like there's something wrong in my life and I'm not exactly online, I'm not exactly on track, I'm not exactly being strengthened in my life. I don't feel nourished and refreshed. I actually feel a little bit bored. There's a lack of spiritual hunger and passion. Perhaps even you sense that this apathy is starting to eat you up and commitment is leaving me, and instead I have this stagnant and indifference, especially when I think about my faith. And for a lot of us, all we want is to feel like what we're doing matters. Who we are is significant somewhere in someone's life. That the time I'm spending with the same old routine over and over and over again has meaning. My work, my relationships, my life. I just want to know, what is my role in God's plan and what is my significance in God's life that he's brought me to? Well, for faith building, we're going to need to start at the beginning. In the beginning, God created. And in Genesis chapters 1 through 11, you get a picture of God intricately and beautifully creating. And then, seemingly instantly, all that he had created is undermined and sabotaged and counterfeited with rebellion and idolatry. And we see this story told in Genesis 1 through 11, God's creation, human rebellion, sabotage, brokenness. And then when we get to Genesis chapter 12, we see God put a plan in place to start afresh, to start again. Not with a new creation, but injecting into creation a new plan, a rescue plan. In Genesis 12 is where he starts his rescue plan into saving a broken, divided, lost world in need of rescue. Humanity desperately needs a new start, and right in Genesis 12, we see the beginning of God's plan to faithfully send his own son so that he can restore and bring blessing to humanity, which you and I experience on a regular basis today because of what happens in Genesis chapter 12. Well, we're going to start by making sure that we know one of these main terms. One of our main terms is faith, and here's what it means essentially. This is according to the Lexham Glossary of Theology. Faith is trust in God that is not founded on empirical proof, but rather it's founded on acceptance of God's trustworthiness. I accept that God is trustworthy to fulfill his promise. And that acceptance, that confidence, that belief, that trust can be called faith. It's not primarily based on having all the evidence and all the clues and all the data. This faith is exemplified. We get to see a picture of what this faith looks like in Abram. I did it. Thank you. And we're going to see Abram's response to God. And this is where he's going to give us this example of what this kind of faith looks like. And we're going to call it going without knowing. Faith starts when we say yes to God, even before we know all the details. Where are my detail people in here? My detail people, I know you, there's a struggle with faith sometimes, right? Like, I'm going to obey as long as you kind of answer these questions. Here's my questions. And as soon as you kind of fill those in, then I'm going to think about it. Well, faith starts when we say, yes, God. I'm doing it. And I recognize I don't have all the details yet. But you know the details. You have the details. You've worked them out and worked them through. You infinitely know everything past, present, and future. You infinitely know the things that aren't going to happen, not just what is going to happen. True faith begins when we obey God, even when our destination is unclear. Do you remember before we had GPSs, we used to just get in the car, start it, put it in drive, and just start driving? You remember that? And you kind of like, hopefully we arrive. I used to say it this way, eventually we'll arrive. Now, that GPS goes on, bam, we already see the destination. We already know that we're going to get. Here's how God reveals his plan, starting in Genesis chapter 12. This big plan of rescue and redemption starts with his revelation in Genesis 12. And he says, here's what I want to do. Here's how I'm going to start this rescue plan to rescue the human beings. Adam and Eve broke it all, and then all of the subsequent people beyond them in their own heritage continued to add to the brokenness, rebellion, and idolatry. And God says this. He says, the Lord has said to Abram, leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on earth will be blessed through you. So Adam departed as the Lord had instructed, and Lot went with him, and Abram was 75 years old when he left Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, and his wealth, his livestock, and all the people he had taken into his household at Haran. And he headed for the land of Canaan. When they arrived in Canaan, Abram traveled through the land as far as Shechem. There he set up camp beside the oak of Moreh. At that time, the area was inhabited by Canaanites. Then the Lord appeared to Abram, and he said, I will give you this land. I will give this land to your descendants. And Abram built an altar there and dedicated it to the Lord who had appeared to him. After that, Abram traveled south and set up camp in the hill country with Bethel to the west and Ai to the east. There he built another altar and dedicated it to the Lord, and he worshiped the Lord. Then Abram continued traveling south by stages toward Negev. So God calls Abraham to leave his homeland and his family and to embark on a new journey of faith. And he promises, God promises Abraham brand new blessings that are going to come through a brand new identity. You are going to be transformed. Now, what does it really mean to trust God? Think about it. If someone told you, on your way out the door, someone said to you, are you? And then they nailed your name, and you didn't quite know exactly how they knew your name. You didn't think they knew your name. And they said, and do you live? And they give you your address. And then they say, and you do you have this family? And then they name your kids. And then they said to you, I have a message to you, for you. And this message was revealed to me while Pastor Dan was speaking, not on this topic, a different topic, imagine, it's a different topic. And they say, God has a desire for you to pack your bags, put your house on the market, leave everything you know. And he said he's going to tell you where you're going sometime later in the future, maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, maybe in a few months. Does that sound radical? Anyone else would get out of there as fast as possible and never come back? It's pretty radical, right? I'm assuming most of you wouldn't go. You wouldn't put your house in the market. You wouldn't be selling nothing. You would chalk that up as someone is pretty bizarre. But that's what God told Abram. He had no itinerary, no GPS directions on how to get there. He had no plan that he revealed to him, no explanation at all, too. God had just somehow revealed himself to Abram, and he said, I am calling you, and I have a plan for you, and here's what I want you to do. And we can zoom in here a bit to see how God reveals himself. He reveals himself in this way. He has this call. And what does that mean? Well, it's the call is this, that God starts by disrupting Abram's comfort. Everything that had made him comfortable is now disruptive. Adam and Eve, their disobedience resulted in divine curses. And here, Abram's obedience is going to bring divine blessing. And it's conditional. God's call requires Abram to demonstrate and to exercise tremendous faith, faith that you and I have already noticed probably wouldn't do. It's pretty wild. The Lord had said to Abram, leave your native country, where you're from, your relatives, who you're with, and your father's family, what you have, and go to the land I will show you. So God takes everything that brings comfort to Abram and he says, I'm disrupting it. And I am instead going to lead you out of your comfort and I'm going to lead you into discomfort. And I'm going to, essentially what God says is, I'm going to replace doing things your way with doing things my way. Leave and go. Leave and go. Leave and go. These, if we personalize these commands that God has given, this call that God has given Abram, if we personalize it, it's unsettling to think about God telling us these two things, leave and go. Because we have an instinct to stay and remain. That's our instinct. We have some level of instincts to do what Abram most likely wanted to do. By the way, God didn't say to Abram, I'm going to list some benefits for you, and here are some things that are available to you, and all I want you to do is to leave and to go. He had to leave his land, his family, and his household. All, by the way, are sources of his own security. These are the sources of his own identity. These, of course, are the sources of security and identity for anybody in the ancient world. And I don't want you to miss how radical this is. It wasn't just a road trip. It wasn't just a day trip. He didn't just have an errand for him to run. It's the total uprooting of his identity, the total uprooting of his comfort, and the total uprooting of his control. And then he doesn't even give him the destination. God said, I want you to go. You can imagine when Abram's having this maybe this interaction with God in heaven, and I wonder if Abram was able to work up this question. Yes, about this. I'm going to trust you mostly, but can you give me any idea, like maybe where? Where am I going? Like the specifics, which direction am I going? And God simply says, leave and go. To a land that I am going to reveal to you later on. A little extra discomfort, not just leaving, not just going, but to an unknown destination, to just make sure that Abram is fully discomfortable. New word, write that down. Fully discomfortable. He's never been this discomfortable in his entire life. It's the kind of discomfortability that you and I would never want to experience. God was calling Abram, listen to this is so important, not just to a new location. He was calling him to a new way of life, a life of faith, a life of trust. He's calling him to a life where full obedience came before every answer, every detail, every known. Full dependence and discomfort was now going to replace self-reliance and comfort. Similar to what you've experienced, perhaps, which is God very, very rarely ever shows us step two before he brings us into step one. So there's a level of faith where when we're walking with God, it's a little bit of a step of faith all along the way. And this is similar to how he began his covenant relationship through Abram. Think about this. If we were to see ourselves relating to God this way or God relating to us this way, imagine this. God may have extraordinary plans awaiting for you, but you're stuck. You're not quite there yet. What's holding you back? What's the obstacle? What's in the way? Potentially, your inability to overcome your own comfort. Potentially, the inability to overcome comfort so that you can get to where God needs you to be to experience what he has for you in the future, and it's your own obedience. In other words, to do life his way instead of your way. That could be the barrier between you thinking, God, where in the world? I've been living this life following Jesus, but where in the world is my blessings? And if you listen close, you might hear God say, where in the world is your obedience? Why would we choose a life of disobedience? It's often not, especially for sincere believers, it's not rebellion. It's a devotion to comfort. Because I, in my heart, worship being comfortable. I hold above God very, very few things, but one of the things that I hold before God is my devotion to comfort, and then God comes somewhere down the way. And God here is giving us a picture of what it looks like when he speaks and he calls and he moves someone out of their comfort and out of their known identity. Can you imagine that all that's holding you back from God's best for you is comfort? I think that's very possible here in the Western Christian culture, that the reason why we don't experience the miracles and God's divine healing and God's intervention is not because we don't have a desire, but it's because we adore comfort and convenience above all else, possibly. And so we're kind of inoculated to a life of faith. And God's call is the same now. Leave your comfort, your idols, and obey. Leave them behind. Is comfort holding you back from experiencing all the best that God has for you? Comfort seems like or it feels like a safe haven, but it keeps us from embracing growth and purpose and opportunities. Let's do this real quick. How many of you remember the points in your life where the greatest times that you've experienced, the greatest moments of growth came after the greatest level of discomfort? You remember that? I'm teaching one of my kids to drive, as recent as this morning. And I am growing and growing and growing. He's doing a great job. But it's discomfort. I don't want to, but I'm willing to. And I'm uncomfortable doing it. Now I'm growing. And this is what we see put in place, the call that God has to draw you out of your life of comfort and into a life of discomfort. I just want to mention that discomfort doesn't mean you abandon stability and then you embrace chaos. I don't mean that. I wish I had time to kind of describe that, but I hope that makes sense to some people. Does that make sense? God doesn't say, hey, you've stabilized. You've put roots down. You're paying your bills. You have a family that you know and love, and I want you to just leave them a note and disappear. That's not what I mean, or the equivalent of that. It's not chaos. Proverbs tells us it's not a life of chaos. But instead, it's a life of willingness to say, all that defines me, my identity and my level, my comforts, I'm willing to abandon them to see what's next and see what God has for me. You might be stuck in a job and you've been wrestling with this for a long time. It's so stagnant. Your connections that you have with people and the work is not necessarily, you don't necessarily sense that God is in it or he's providing open doors and opportunities and any kind of redemptive value to it. And you might remain in a comfortable but unfulfilling place in that job because it's just giving you stability and a steady paycheck. And it's so familiar. Despite feeling unfulfilled, I don't see where God's at work. I don't see where God is using me. And possibly, if you listen close, you would sense God's nudging you to pursue a new career or a ministry or a way of life that's better suited to the giftings that he's given you. He might have given you a passion and a talent to teach kids, and all along now he's got someone for you that he wants you to invest in, but we're unwilling to leave our comfort and be uncomfortable to change jobs, vocations, or careers because it's so familiar. Meanwhile, God's trying to nudge you and say, I have something for you. I have something so significant for you. And your pastor's not telling you to leave your job this morning. Your pastor's asking you to consider that what God has for you is going to cost you comfort to get where he's gifted you to be and where he's gifted you to invest. Do you remember those days of feeling like, I got to do something? What if that was God whispering to you, you've got to do something? It's time to move on. You're gifted in teaching. I didn't gift you to sit in a corporate office in a cubicle instead of stepping into this teaching ministry or vocation. Some of us get stuck with an unwillingness to have a difficult conversation that needs to be had. Parents, children, spouse, siblings, neighbor, boss, friend, teammate, coworker. And that difficult conversation needs to be had, but it would require so much discomfort. And being comfortable and leaving things familiar and leaving things the same may lead us to shy away for too long addressing conflict or even sharing your faith. Maybe you avoid sharing your faith with a friend or a family member because you fear rejection or you feel disrupting the relationship as it stands now and it's too safe and too secure. But by staying silent, you miss the God-ordained open doors that he's given you to say, walk through it, say something, have the conversation, speak the truth in love. I'm with you. I'm going to lead you into this. You'd have to get uncomfortable to get where God wants you to go through that difficult conversation. Choosing comfort of silence over bold faith can hinder all kinds of spiritual impact. Don't wait for an overwhelming feeling that faith is going to bring you, because faith isn't a feeling. Trust isn't a feeling. It's not just believing in your heart, it's saying yes with your feet. Faith prompts you. It's a movement. It's an energy. It's a force that causes you to do what God's asking you to do. You remember, to follow Jesus, we must first leave our self-reliance. You might remember when Jesus is telling the story to some potential followers, and he says, basically, you need to consider the cost. It's going to be uncomfortable. You might remember where he said, you're going to have to, if you want to follow me, you're going to have to pick up your own cross of self-denial and sacrifice your own self-reliance. I want you to consider the possible consequences of following me, and follow anyway, be obedient anyway. Warren Wiersbe gives this twist on faith. He says, faith is not believing in spite of evidence. And it's a part of it, but it's not all there is, right? It's obeying in spite of consequences. Boldness, faith, discomfort. This is what God is bringing Abram to say, I have something for you. I need you to respond with obedience. And when God calls us to follow him, whether it's to go now, whether he calls you to give more, whether he calls you to forgive, Whether he calls you to go without and sacrifice, the very first step of trust is obedience. The very first step of obedience is trust. And that brings us to another part of the plan that we see here, which is the promise that God rewards obedience. It's not just obedience into suffering forever for all time, and you have to learn to live with it. It's a part of it, but it's certainly not all of it. But what is a promise? A promise is pretty simple. It's the practice of committing to another person to accomplish a task. It's a commitment to accomplish a task. And God says, here's what you'll experience when you submit to my plan, when you submit to my design, when you submit to my desires, when you submit to my direction, here's what you're going to experience. And God says, I promise. Here's what you're going to experience. I'm making this promise to you. The most influential promise to Abram, to make of him a great nation, in whom all the families of earth are blessed through the obedience of Abram, to give to him a family, to give to him the land of Canaan. This is a blessing that is renowned and cherished and held so dearly in Israel. God pledges to transform Abram's present circumstances. And by the way, Abram at this stage is both childless and landless. He doesn't have anything. There isn't really a starting point. But look what God says to him. I've called you to go. Leave and go. And when you do, when you leave your comfort for my discomfort, when you obey and trust me, I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on earth will be blessed through you. That's pretty intense. That is very unique. And this is, again, a cherished segment of God's promises that he makes to the Hebrew people. Right after this call comes a sevenfold promise, a perfect set of blessings. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great. You will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who treat you with contempt. And all of the families on earth will be blessed. How? Through you, through your obedience, through your trust. So God rewards his obedience. And God is announcing that he's promising that he's going to reward his obedience. And those blessings that he rewards him with are going to ripple beyond, far beyond one man, far beyond one family. And also, we see here, far beyond one nation. God isn't just calling Abram out of something. This is so cool. He's not just calling him out of something. He's not just saying, leave this. He's saying, I'm calling you into something. Every time God asks you to give up something, you'll find that he replaces it with something even better. I can't help but think God, when God was speaking to me in eighth grade, Dan, give up that girlfriend. I have someone better for you, and I married her. Yep. I didn't even know that girl's name in eighth grade, but I gave her up. Big sacrifice. Along the way, bigger things, more significant things, that I thought it was time to open my hand and let it go, and with fear and trembling, thinking this is so risky, and every time I've opened my hands, eventually I look at my hands and say, God gave me something better. Wait, what an upgrade. What a tremendous upgrade. And I'm assuming some have experienced that same thing. God doesn't just call Abram out of his familiarity to unfamiliarity. He calls him into something far better. This isn't just about Abram's success. It's about God's plan. God is going to bless the world. God is going to send Jesus through Abram's family. Ultimately, this is the beginning of God's plan to get Jesus to the world, and he's going to do so through the obedience, through keeping his promise to Abram, who has to be obedient. Abram's plan is just his own happiness. God's plan was to bless generations and generations and generations to come. His obedience is going to lead him into far more blessing than he'd ever experienced in his own plan. Sometimes I think about the life that God has brought to me, and I think if I would have planned my life, my plans would have been so inferior to what God has planned. His plan has been so much more. His disobedience would damage lives far beyond his own, but his obedience is now going to bless families and generations far beyond his own. So here's the message of our culture. Here's the message of the Word of Faith movement in the Christian community. And that is that if you just use your words, you just say what you want to be true, if you just affirm anything you imagine or desire or even affirm yourself, then you are going to achieve your dreams. You are going to experience the blessings that the universe, that the world has for you, or in the Word of Faith camp, the blessings that God has for you. But God doesn't tend to send blessings through our words. He tends to send blessings through our obedience, through our actions, through our follow-through. That's how they flow. God's blessing flows through our bold, obedient trust. And when you obey, you position yourself to experience God's blessings. I'm assuming for a lot of you that resonates. When you obey, you position yourself to experience God's blessing. This generational faith is captured in the New Testament. I love this passage in the New Testament where the Apostle Paul is affirming Timothy. He's a new, young church leader who's overseeing a church, and Timothy is very young and has some reservations about whether or not he's qualified, and the Apostle Paul affirms him as a church leader, and look what he points out. The Apostle Paul says to Timothy, "I remember your genuine faith, for you share the faith that first filled your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice." If you have any relatives named Lois and Eunice, you just located where they got their names from. Lois and Eunice. They are your grandmother and your mother were people of faith. And because of their faith, Timothy, you now have faith. And you have enough dynamic faith in your calling at your young age that you're going to oversee one of the early churches. As that faith was passed on from generation to generation. And Timothy, I know that same faith continues strong in you. We might say, God, I'm working. We might hear God saying to us, I'm working to change the world. And I want to use you to get people to Jesus. I'm at work changing the world, and I plan to use you to get people to Jesus. And we'll see how God's blessings ripple beyond me, and they do that with a generational faith, very similar to this generational faith that starts early on and it's passed from one generation to the next. And that means that if you have the privilege of having a child or a grandchild, then you have the ability to devote yourself and pray, God, help me become laser focused on raising my child or my children or grandchildren, to trust and treasure Jesus. Laser focused. Where I prioritize family worship, whatever that looks like. Where I prioritize immersion in my local church family, even when it's not convenient. I'm laser focused on doing that. Sometimes, for some of us, it might be the ability to grasp the vision of what it looks like to invest myself into family building, not necessarily future building, but I'm present here and now with who I have, and I'm going to invest now, thinking less about what all the family needs for the future, but thinking about what's needed right now in investing myself in generational faith. Your faithful obedience in your own home blesses future generations with a legacy of faith. Moms, dads, grandma, grandpa, auntie, God knows that when your tank is empty, and you don't know where you're going to come up with the energy, He sees you when you say, I'm going to open this Jesus storybook Bible anyway, and we're going through a story. God knows and God sees you when you're out of gas at the end of every night, and you sacrificially decide to finish the lesson, finish the story, to kneel beside the bed and pray night after night after night. God sees you when He knows. When you feel like you're dragging your kids on a Sunday morning to get them among the church family, even though they may not even know how much they love it yet, but you're dragging them, seemingly doing so when there's so many other things that you could be doing. God knows, and He sees you, and you're participating. Get this, your obedience is participating in the plan that He has to reach the world and bless the world with generational faith that's rippling from your family into the next, until one day your adult kids are leading their own children, loving their own church family, serving in their own church family. And that's happening because you are responding to the obedience of God to say, I'm going to make this happen even if it's uncomfortable. I'm going to invest myself. Years later, you watch God using your grown children to bless their own community, to bless their own family, to bless their own team, to bless their own class. Do you remember the first time that your kid told you, or the teacher, your child's teacher told you that your kid is yapping about Jesus in class? You ever, anybody remember that? I mean, my very first reaction was, I know his mother's constantly talking about Jesus. It is not me. It is way her. Watching your kids get used by God to trust Jesus and treasure Jesus and share Jesus, to bless their own community and their own family as faithful believers inspired by your example. And then lastly, there's a response. God deserves worship. The call, the promise, the response. God deserves worship. So Abram departed as the Lord instructed. He did it. Abram did it, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he left Haran. He obeyed in faith. Despite all the possible consequences, despite all of the loss, Abram departed as the Lord had instructed. No itinerary, but he went. 75 years old, but he went. Some of us use being 75 years old as an excuse not to go to the store. But he went. He had wealth. He had roots, and he had a name, a reputation in Haran, but he left it. He took his wife, Sarai, his nephew, Lot, and all his wealth, his livestock, and all the people that he had taken into his household at Haran, and he headed for the land of Canaan. There, he set up camp beside the oak of Moreh. At that time, the area was inhabited by Canaanites. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and he said, I will give this land to your descendants. I will give this land to your descendants. By the way, we have some insight here on some of what is happening in the Middle East with the clash between the Israelites, or the nation of Israel, and the Palestinians. And you see here why this clash is centuries old. It's because Israel believes that they have a God-given right to the land that is disputed. It's not just a clash over ideology, but a clash over the belief that there's a God-given right to that land. to explain some of the geopolitics that you and I get to see and experience in some ways on a daily basis. Why is there a clash? Because God said, I will give this land to your descendants. So Genesis records a number of occasions when a God appears to patriarchs of our faith. And we get to see Abram's response here. Abram built an altar there, and he dedicated it to the Lord, who had appeared to him. And again, it's repeated. There he built another altar, and he dedicated it to the Lord, and he worshiped the Lord. At every stop, Abram builds an altar, and really quickly, it might look like this, the altar that he builds, which you can tell is a stack of rocks. If you really like this altar and you want one, we have these available in our Grow On Your Own wall back there. There's a whole stack of rocks you can take home with you. Not really. But this is used as an altar. He would approach this, and he would, oftentimes these ancient patriarchs would make it a site for sacrifices and for offerings in their own deity, and obviously in Abram's here would be making a sacrifice to God. And although Abram did not view God as residing in these altars, he did believe that he could meet God here, that God himself would meet him here. And it serves as a reminder, this altar serves as a reminder of the special relationship that he has with God, and a reminder that God has promised land to him. After that, Abram traveled south, and there he built another altar and dedicated it to the Lord, and he worshiped the Lord. So he's building altars and worshiping. Altar worship. And worship will mark and express the tangible moments of trust that he experienced and God's faithfulness to him. The only thing that Abram has to bring to God is his worship, and God directs him to do that here at this altar. And when he does so, he is doing so right next to the Canaanites, who worship their own God. So next to them to their altar is Abram's altar. And God has specifically told Abram how to worship at this altar. In Exodus, he describes it this way. God says to Israel, here's how I want you to worship me. I want you to remind yourself and tell yourself, remember and rehearse that I am a God of compassion and mercy. And when he wants to form their heart, he tells them, remember this and rehearse this. I am slow to anger, and I'm filled with unfailing love and faithfulness. Who lavishes unfailing love on thousands and forgives iniquity and forgives sin and forgives rebellion. Continue at these altars to remember who I am and remember what I've done. Who am I and what I've done? And at this altar is where Abram begins the process of ongoing worship. The number one way to worship God is our obedience. He doesn't want sacrifices. He wants our heart in submission, in obedience. And when we make ourselves an altar, we regularly learn to respond and remember to all that God is and all that he's promised. Monthly, we gather together as a church family, and we participate in a sacrament, communion. We'll do that today. Remembering the broken body and the shed blood of Jesus. We do that on a monthly basis. Respond and remember. On a weekly basis, we get together and we sing. And we sing all that God is and all that God has done, and try not to sing about all we're going to do for God. We don't sing primarily of our faithfulness. We sing of his faithfulness to us. And every day we learn how to make it stick. Personal altar life. A place where I get with God and I'm just remembering and responding, and I'm praying prayers of surrender, and I'm saying, God, you are so full of unfailing love and faithfulness, and I say it, and I learn to say it in my conversations. This brings us to something super important, that Jesus is the greater Abraham. Jesus embodies the ultimate act of surrender, paralleling Abram's call to leave for an unknown future, for an unknown consequence. Why would he do that? Out of faith and trust in his father. And just like Abram left his home in obedience to the Heavenly Father. We know Jesus left his throne to enter our broken world. He obeyed even unto death, not just for his own blessing, so that we could be blessed forever. The Apostle Paul puts them together here in Galatians. Through Christ Jesus, God has blessed the Gentiles with the same blessing he promised to Abraham. That's the gospel. God called, Jesus obeyed, and we received the blessing. Genesis 1-11 leaves us in a difficult spot, longing for hope in a broken world. And just as God called Abram to step out in faith, he calls us today to leave our comforts and our conveniences and to trust his promises and to worship him. Long time ago, when I got out of high school, I had already made a plan, and my plan came together this way. I was going to go to college, attend Messiah College, play baseball there, study computer engineering, and here's my logic. It's the least amount of school for the most amount of salary. But God had a different plan. And sitting over a basket of Zeb original chicken wings, God said, "You're not doing that. You're not doing that." Instead, he said, "I am going to direct you to prepare yourself to be set apart and used in church leadership. And you will go to a university I will show you. That university was Oral Roberts University, where God had asked me to abandon my plans and get my degree in Christian leadership. And I recognize now that God was saying, if you obey me, I'm going to bless you, I'm going to bless your family, and a generation of young people in your own city. And here's what it's going to take. Get out of what you're comfortable with. Get ready for discomfort. And I'm going to make a promise and keep that promise to you and through you. And this is what God's saying. Let go of your comfort idols and trust in God's designs, his desires, and his direction for your life. Let go. This is a matter of prayer that you experience with God on your own. Let go of your comfort idols. What are the idols that I am elevating that make me comfortable, that make me familiar, and that make me who I am? And God, show me that you can be trusted to keep the promises that you've made. And I'm going to surrender to your design and your desires and your direction for me. I'm going to do it. I'm surrendering it. God's blessings always flow through our obedient trust, despite what the consequences are. I want to leave you with this. We're out of time. We're going to participate in communion together, but I want to leave you with this. This is a quote that hit me right around the time God was directing me away from a secure career that's known and detailed into an unfamiliar vocation of full-time church leadership that was unknown and unfamiliar. And this quote really, really helped carry me through at the very beginning and to the end. This is from the Screwtape Letters from C.S. Lewis. Listen to this. "Indeed, the safest road to hell is the gradual one, the gentle slope, soft underfoot, without sudden turnings, without milestones, without signposts. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape." How does somebody get far from God? Go with the flow. Do whatever. Follow the easiest path. The path of least resistance is that which makes both men and rivers crooked. Today, I believe that God has something more for us, more for you, on the other side of our own obedience. Let's pray together.